Hey folks, Scott Weingart here with another episode of Practical Evidence. This is supposed to be the November episode, but I'm getting it out a little late. I apologize for that, but what are you going to do? Busy, 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 busy. This month we have a trauma topic, and this guideline we're going to discuss is the recently published EAST, the Eastern Association for the Surgery of Trauma Guidelines on Blunt Cardiac Injury. This was from a supplement in the Journal of Trauma where the EAST updated a ton of their guidelines and published some new ones. EAST is the evidence-based group in trauma care. So if you haven't checked them out, go to EAST, like the direction, .org, and you will find the complete list of their guidelines for free, and they are worth reading because they are an evidence-based pathway through the care of trauma patients, an area which, in general, the evidence is very scarce. Okay, let's go through this. It gives you what finally is a pretty regimented approach to how to deal with blunt cardiac injury, which up until this point, no one's really come out and given you a pathway you could follow. You just kind of had a guess, and this is pretty good, pretty good. Let's get to it. At level one, an admission ECG should be performed on all patients in whom BCI is suspected. Now, the actual manuscript itself goes into who you should suspect it in, but you know this stuff. It's anyone who's taken a significant shot to their chest, anyone with a significant deceleration injury, anyone with a significant blunt force trauma to their body, falls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So pretty much anyone you have any question on, you should get an ECG. If you look up at the monitor and weird stuff is going on the monitor, tons of PVCs or tachycardia, get an ECG. Have a liberal approach to getting ECGs on blunt trauma patients. Pretty easy. All right, nothing new there. Level two, if the admission ECG demonstrates a new abnormality, an arrhythmia, ST changes, ischemia, heart block, or unexplained ST changes, well, that was kind of redundant on their part, but hey, there you go. The patient should be admitted for continuous ECG monitoring. For patients with pre-existing abnormalities, comparison should be made to the old EKG. Well, that's pretty good. So if you have anything wacky on the EKG in a patient with the appropriate mechanism, you admit them for monitoring. You put them on a telebed. Okay, we could do that. In patients with a normal EKG result and a normal troponin I level, BCI is ruled out. Now, this is new. This is good. We've been going back and forth forever. Should we send cardiac enzymes with the older generation stuff like the CK, CKMB, troponin T? No, you shouldn't have. They just were not sensitive or specific for this. But troponin I and a normal ECG, you're done. You're done. That's it. One, just one. Normal troponin and a normal ECG, and you're pretty much done. Now they go on to say, though, the optimal timing of these measurements, however, has yet to be determined. And they go further in this recommendation. Conversely, patients with a normal EKG result but elevated troponin I should be admitted to a monitor bed. Okay, so there you go. So if you're suspected, get an EKG. If you suspect it, get one troponin. If both are normal, you're done. If one is abnormal, then admit them. That sounds pretty good. For patients with hemodynamic instability or persistent new arrhythmia, an echocardiogram should be obtained. If an optimal transthoracic echo cannot be performed, the patient should have transesophageal echocardiogram. And this has pretty much been the practice of most trauma centers. What you could take from this, though, is that if they don't have any hemodynamic instability or persistent dysrhythmia, then you don't need to get an echocardiogram. I mean, you could do your bedside one, knock yourself out. It's just fun. Why not do it? But you don't need to get these guys a formal echo just because they have some PVCs on their ECG. And in fact, the yield of echocardiograms is going to be pretty low in a hemodynamically stable patient without a persistent dysrhythmia. So that's good, like that. Here we go. Number four, the presence of a sternal fracture alone does not predict the presence of BCI. That's blunt cardiac injury, in case I didn't define that acronym yet. And thus should not prompt monitoring in the setting of a normal ECG and troponin, which is beautiful. You know, we used to be scared of this. Oh, sternal fracture. Oh my God, they must have injured their heart. Okay, so if there's a sternal fracture alone, that's a risk for BCI. So get your ECG, send your troponin, but if both are negative, done. Number five, creatinine phosphokinase, CPK, with isoenzyme analysis should not be performed because it is not useful in predicting which patients have or will have complications related to BCI, which means don't get your CK, don't get your CKMB is what they're saying with that. Number six, nuclear medicine studies add little when compared with echo and should not routinely be performed. Now, before we go on to the last set, the level three recommendations, let's talk about our bandwidth sponsor, which as always is EB Medicine. EB Medicine, publisher of Emergency Medicine Critical Care, the journal for which I am the associate editor, and my buddy Rob Arnfeldt edits. But what do I want to talk to you about from EB Medicine today? Well, what they're doing is they're releasing audio reviews, aka podcasts. And because I haven't had enough work, I agreed to do some podcasts with them. So I reviewed four of the Emergency Medicine Critical Care articles. So those will be coming out. I don't know when, but shortly, probably. And then we got Andy Slowis of pediatric podcasting fame to do the pediatric emergency medicine practice ones. And Steve Carroll of the EM Basic podcast will be doing the straight up adult EM practice audio summary. So look for those coming soon. They should be good. And you could link to EB Medicine from the practicalevidence.org site. And if you do and you buy anything from them, then the site gets a little bit of money back. So it helps the show too. Okay, at level three, elderly patients with known cardiac disease, unstable patients, and those with abnormal admission ECG results can safely undergo surgery provided they are appropriately monitored. Consideration should be given to the placement of a PA catheter in such cases. And I will leave that to my anesthesia friends to debate whether that is valid or not. It is at level three, which, as you know, if you know anything about guidelines, is a very low-level recommendation. And I'm not sure if these patients are really going to be getting PAC catheters, but it's nice that you can take them to the OR, at least according to this, regardless of their BCI. All right, number two at the level three. Troponin I should be measured routinely for patients with suspected BCI. If elevated, patients should be admitted to a monitored setting, and troponin I should be followed up serially, although the optimal timing is unknown. Well, what do they mean by that? It means if you admit them because one elevated troponin or because of the abnormal ECG, they should have serial cardiac enzymes. We'd be doing that anyway as emergency physicians because that's just what we do, but this is for the surgeons as well. And last but not least, cardiac computed tomography, aka CT scan, or magnetic resonance imaging can be used to help differentiate AMI from BCI in trauma patients with abnormal EKG results, cardiac enzymes, and or abnormal echo, and to determine whether these patients need cardiac cath. Well, what do they mean by that? You can get a CT of the coronary arteries or an MRI of the coronary arteries and actually see if this is a pre-existing coronary disease that led to an MI that led to a trauma, or the trauma that led to blunt cardiac injury and therefore showing cardiac abnormalities. And there you go, non-invasive way to figure it out. So I think we could stop there, except for your probably what is your favorite part of the Practical Evidence podcast. What is MCRIT drinking? Well, MCRIT is drinking what we all should be drinking at this time of the year if we live in an area in which it is available, and that is the Sierra Nevada Celebration Ale. Comes out around this time of year. Very good fall/winter beer. SNCA is good stuff in my book. Scott Weingart for the Practical Evidence Podcast saying bye-bye.